Reading from Canto 4, Chapter 29, Text 47. Chapter entitled Talks Between Narada and King Prachani Barhi. Barhisman Agnanad Arthakashisho Marta Drishtim Kritaha Shrotra Sparshishva Prishtavasasu Tasmat Karmasu Barhishman Agnanad Arthakashishu Martha Drishtim Kataha Shrotra Sparshishva Aprishtavatsasu. Translation provided by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear King Barhisman, you should never out of ignorance take to the Vedic rituals or to fruitive activities which may be pleasing to hear about or which may appear to be the goal of self-interest. You should never take these to be the ultimate goal of life. Purport. Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadanti avapaschitaha veda vadarataha partha nanyad astiti vadinaha kamad manaha svargapara janma karma phala pradam kriya visesho bahulam bhogaishwarya gatim prati. Translation. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Srimad Bhagavad Gita 2.42 and 43. Generally, people are very much attracted to the fruitive activities sanctioned in the Vedic rituals. One may be very much attracted to becoming elevated to the heavenly planets by performing great sacrifices like those of King Barhisman. Sri Narada Muni wanted to stop King Barhisman from engaging in such fruitive activities. Therefore, he is now directly telling him, don't be interested in such temporary benefits. In modern civilization, people are very much interested in exploiting the resources of material nature through the methods of science. Indeed, this is considered advancement. This is not actually advancement, however, but is simply pleasing to hear. Although we are advancing according to such concocted methods, we are nonetheless forgetting our real purpose. Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore says, Jaravidya yata mayar vaibhava tomar bhajane badha. Materialistic studies are the glare of maya only, for they are an obstacle to spiritual progress. The temporary comforts of life experienced either on this planet or on the other planets are all to be taken as illusory, because they do not touch the real purpose of life. The real purpose of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. Ignorant of the real purpose of life, people take to either gross materialistic activities or ritualistic activities. King Barhisman is herein requested not to be attached to such activities. In the Vedas, it is stated that the performance of sacrifice is the actual purpose of life. A section of the Indian population known as the Arya Samajists laid too much stress on the sacrificial portion of the Vedas. This verse indicates, however, that such sacrifices are to be taken as illusory. Actually, the aim of human life should be God realization. or Krishna consciousness. The Vedic performances are of course very glittering and pleasing to hear about, but they do not serve the real purpose of life. Om Ajnana Timira. Translation again. My dear King, the great pure devotee Paramahamsa Mahabhagavat Sri Narad Muni is now in his conversation gradually coming to the main point, giving up the allegorical story which he has narrated already, and having opened through that allegorical story Bharikshman Maharaj's heart to receive the real thing. Now he is directly delving on the actual philosophical aspects of what he wants to actually convey to him. The whole purpose of the allegory was to make just Bharishman more open to hearing. Generally kings are not so easy to approach and preach. The bigger a man is in the world, the more closely he is for being preached to, because he thinks there is no need. A poor man on the street will say, "Oh yeah, very nice, thank you for telling me this, I did not know." But generally a man who is educated, who is well off in the material sense, is usually quite egoistic, and therefore to approach him and preach to him requires either great compassion or maybe along with that great expertise. So imagine the king of the planet and having to preach to him, only somebody like Narad Muni, who is Daksha, the great, one of the qualities of the devotees, 26 qualities of Vaishnavas, is Daksha. Daksha means who is always expert. So expert in doing everything in devotional service, but the most expert in preaching. Prabhupada was like that. He could preach to so many people. He could have, there was no, obstacle to whom he could approach. He could approach anybody, heads of state, presidents, religious leaders, common men, the hippies, housewives, students, Indians, Africans. He could approach any class of society. You know, what an expertise they would require to be able to address any type of audience and still convey the point. That's not very easy, to be able to convey a point to anybody, people from any class. It would be absolutely African people who are almost uncivilized, but he can convey to them. And top heads of state. Prabhupada was given a chance to speak in UNO, in Carnegie Hall in London. The people who are very, very, the top brass of people are coming there. But he could convey to them also. So, Narad Muni, being so expert, is now been able to actually open Bharishman's heart. So now he comes to the actual substance of what he wants to tell him. So since the last couple of slokas now, he's been bringing him gradually to the point of understanding the glory of bhakti. Narad Muni's whole purpose is only one, to make King Bharishman a Vaishnav, to make him a devotee of Sri Krishna. Bharishman is not a sinful person in one sense, because he is a pious person. He is not an ordinary materialist who is wildly engaging in sense enjoyment. He is comfortably placed in his understanding of the tenets of dharma as given in the house of the Vedas. He is within the house of the Vedas. He is not out of them. So he is following. Maybe he had a guru also who would guide him. However, he was on the lowest rung of the house of the Vedas. The house has got many floors. So the house of Vedas has many floors. It's a big mansion. So there is the lowest level, which is immediately after the gross materialistic level, is the Karmakanda section. Then the person gets more realization of the principles. He goes to the level of Jnanakanda section. And then he is fortunate enough, he can also evolve into the Upasana Kanda. So these are the three main Kandas in the Vedas. കർമ്മകാന്ഡ, ജ്ഞാനകാന്ഡ, ഉപാസനകാന്ഡ. സോ Prabhupada says there are four categories of people in this world. Vedic knowledge is beautiful in many aspects, but one aspect which strikes oftentimes is to see how they have to classify things so scientifically. You know, you have classification in physics, you know, you have classification of elements. You have the, you know, the halogen series, and you have the lanthanide series, and you know, various things like that. They classify. The periodic table of Mendeleev, they classify. Classify various chemicals, organic, inorganic, organic, so and so like that. But what is most striking is that how the Vedas can take universal levels of classification and divide them beautifully. All miseries, for example. Imagine, there are so many miseries in this world, is it not? You can go through a hell lot of things. This world has got a variety of everything, also variety of a lot of miseries. But imagine to be able to classify accurately miseries, three types. You cannot have a misery beyond the three types. Adhyatmik or Adhibhautik or Adhidevik. That's it. They can classify. They can classify all classes of people. All classes. Generally, we know we go into like Indians and Americans and you know this and that. That is one class. Low economic status, high economic status, like that. You know, socioeconomically. Underdeveloped countries, developing and you know, developed, like that. So we classify. We always classify. Human nature is to always classify things. Like that's one of his natures. So they also classify. So a broad way, Padma says two classes: asuras and suras. Two classes, and it's so perfect because that's the way they all look in relationship to God. Here, looking to ourselves. Okay, so it's a very egoistic way of classifying things. But here they have this universal principles. They say, okay, asuras and suras. Right, and then you have Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras. So you have to fall into one of these four. Perfect, is it not? And then you have over here for the classification, Prabhupada gives all categories of men can be divided into either Karmis, Jnanis, Yogis, or Bhaktas. Wonderful. Depending upon the state of evolution of their consciousness, this is based on evolutionary progress of the Jivatma. So you have either Karmis, you have the Jnanis, a little higher, understand absolute truth a little better. Then you have the Yogis, who understand the Paramatma aspect of the Lord, therefore they are a little better than the impersonalist. And then you have the Bhaktas, who are able to understand the Lord's personal form as He is, as God, as Bhagavan. So then Bhakta is considered the highest. So this is the evolutionary cycle. Of course, lower than the Karmis are the gross materialists, who don't even fall in this classification at all. Because this was classified for people who follow the Vedas. Now we in the Kali Yuga are out of the Vedas. Nobody is following Vedas whatsoever. So we are out of this whole classification. So 99% of the population does not even fall into the Karmi category. They are not even Karmis. Because Karmis means, like Maharaj Marishwan, he's a Karmi. He's a materialist. But he's a controlled materialist. He's a regulated materialist. He's a sensible materialist. Therefore we call him pious. Because he at least understands higher principles of behavior beyond what his mind dictates. Today's karmis have no sense of higher values whatsoever. It is just that their mind is the authority. They accept authority in their life, obviously. But whose authority? Their mind. If the mind says something, then just do it. That was the peak of this particular concept was practiced by a class of people in America called the hippies, who sort of expanded this concept to the highest, who just went wild into sense gratification. Why? Because whatever pleases you, do it. Anything. Like Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who is from that same culture, he was raised in that culture, so he gives us an insight into what things were at that time. Anything, you know, absolutely, we cannot even imagine being, at least to some extent, cultured Indians brought up in a conservative environment where we have values which dictate our life in so many ways, they contain it. But where you imagine a social system where there is absolutely no inhibitions, a zero inhibition society, where there is nothing is considered bad, nothing actually is considered bad at all. Everything is good. Why? Because that makes you feel good. That's the criteria. It makes me feel good, so it must be good.
who cares about what God feels or what, because there is no just system. In one sense, they are not to blame because the system was destroyed. A hippie movement in the 60s, the whole culture collapsed. All social values collapsed. And they were brought up in a culture where everything was just fine. Sex with anybody was just fine. I mean, this is a completely loose society to the limits. Of course, we have Prabhupada walking, as Shyamasundara Prabhu says, walking to the whole culture and says, okay, you chant Hare Krishna and you are meditating intoxication, illicit sex. Wonderful. He could do that. He was so powerful, he was so potent that he could make them do things which was impossible to imagine. From a system of no values to such intense pure values which are practiced by the most evolved people in this world. You know? So from lifting people from the lowest to lowest low. Lowest low means really patita. Here comes a patita, pavan person who can actually make them pavan. From the lowest low, he raises them to, okay, you worship Krishna, deity worship, ekadashi, and wear saris, cover your heads, and no onion, garlic also, and not even cakes made of eggs. From that level, from zero level to the highest level. And here, everyone says, yeah, why not? They just followed him. Why? What is it, if we consider, what could have possibly been the factor which actually operated at that time? How was Prabhupada able to get people to follow things which were not even in their remotest vocabulary throughout the entire life? They followed, the whole system was no authority. Correct? As Maharaj says, the slogan, Radhana Swami Maharaj says this, he said, do not trust anybody beyond 30. That was their slogan. If you are beyond 30 years of age, you are old man, old values, orthodox, conservative, and don't want to follow you. So, they are all, you know, in their late teens and early, you know, 20s. So, anybody beyond themselves, anybody beyond them, their own group, do not follow. No authority. And here comes a man who was dictating practically out of love to follow the supreme authority, that is God. And you should do this, you should not do that. And they all accepted him. Because the only one reason why this happened. Because they fell in love with him. They followed in love with Prabhupada. And you love somebody, you just follow him. They have no understanding that he is a pure devotee. He's beyond the three gunas, and he's uttam adhikari, and he's all that. They didn't know what all this means. They just knew that this is a wonderful, compassionate, loving person, and somehow Prabhupada was able to convey to them clearly that he is their genuine, well-wishing friend. And everyone else they had met in the world, the parents and everyone else they knew was actually not their well-wishing friend at all. But here's a man who did not want to take anything from them, wanted to just give them. So this brings us to the point of what this section of today's talk is all about. It brings us to the point of bhakti. Narada Muni also trying to do the same thing in a more elaborate way, giving a big whole story with on analogy and this and that and everything else, and gradually bringing Bhrishman to where? From a Karmaganda section, he says, okay, even he's talked previously about not getting involved with jnana, and not even yoga, but gradually lift him to the level of bhakti. To bhakti. And that is what is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam all about. Dharma projita kaitava atro paramo nirmatsaranam satam. It makes a person nirmatsara. The dividing line between a bhakta, if you go to see jnanis, karmis, jnanis, yogis and bhaktas, this is the classification Prabhupada gave. Now, you can further divide it into two parts. Bhakta on one side, other side you put all the three categories, karmis, jnanis and yogis. What a dividing line. What divides this category of people? It's one quality which divides them, that is envy. It is envy which makes the devotee go on this side because they are non-envious, and everybody else goes on this side because they are all actually envious. So envy is that very important criterion. A karmakandi also is envious of God. A Gyani also is envious of God. A Yogi also, even maybe as great as Durvasa Muni, is envious of God. And a devotee is great because he is Nirmatsara. Nirmatsara. Nirmatsara Pujitav. We worship Pujitav. We worship those who are non-envious. So the whole Narad Muni's attempt is to bring Barishman from there to there. From Karmakanda to Bhakti. So, Prabhupada is talking over here that generally, in our attempts to do Bhakti, it's like it is so high. Bhakti is so high. It's beyond even Jnana. It's beyond even Karma. It's beyond even Yoga. It's so high. As I said, it's the loftiest floor of the house of the Vedas. In fact, it is even beyond the Vedas. Frankly speaking, objectively speaking, it is said that bhakti is not even there within the Vedas. It's beyond the Vedas. Because Vedas only deal with the three modes. Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nristraigunya Bhavarjuna. So, Krishna is telling Arjuna to go beyond even the terrace of the house of Vedas. The terrace is the highest floor. It's a go beyond that. It's higher than the Vedas. So, in our attempts to go so high, which is so high, I mean literally transcendental, we fall somewhere. We fall to the fruitive section. We fall to the karmakanda section. We tend to go for a high jump. You know, unless you have really trained yourself very well, you go for a high jump, you're going to fall, you know, just maybe 3 feet, 2 feet, and just fall like that. So trying to do bhakti, which is so high, you fall at the lowest rung of Vedas, that is karmakanda. So you find generally, you find that even our attempts to do bhakti is turgid with our desires for fruitive gain. Analyze it. That what is fruitive? Fruitive means that we do a particular activity. Yes, it has to be contained in the tenets of the scriptures, but we want some gain out of that. That's fruitive. Fruitive. We require some fruit out of that. It's called fruitive activity. So, oftentimes, what passes as bhakti in this world is not at all bhakti. It's not bhakti at all. In fact, not even in a semblance of bhakti whatsoever. It's all actually karmakanda. I will explain the difference. The activity in itself does not determine whether the activity is karmakanda or bhakti. It does not. A karmakandi can also be seen bathing in all the tirthas, in the kundas, and a devotee can do the same thing also. You find devotees at Kumbh Mela, and you find even karmis and jnanis and yogis at Kumbh Mela. So going to Kumbh Mela in itself is not an act of devotion. You find even devotees giving charity, and even Jarasandha like demons giving charity. Jarasandha is glorified as a person who was glorified all over the world as a big man giving lots of charity. In fact, he was famous for being very much inclined towards helping the Brahmanas. A Brahmana would go with complete confidence, if I go to this king, he will flood me with wealth. And Jarasandha never failed him. So in the eyes of the world, Jarasandha was a very, very lofty materialist. But when you put the criteria of envy, then you know, he's not here, he's there. He goes this side. He was performing dan, he was performing a lot of yajyas, everything he was doing. But what differentiated him as the greatest demon of the Lord, demoniac opponent of the Lord, was the factor of envy. So the activity in itself is not karma kanda or jnana kanda or upasana kanda or bhakti. It is what? Ultimately our consciousness. Prabhupada said, we are not going to Kumbh Mela for taking a bath. Now that's a revolutionary statement. The whole world goes to Kumbh Mela. 3 crores of people go to Kumbh Mela just for one thing, for taking a dip. That's it. There's nothing else to do there. Okay, there are a lot of shops and a lot of yogis and Moni Babas, but that's like a perquisite, you know, like a perk. You just, because you go there, you see all these fellows also. Someone head down and someone neck, you know, all body into the mud for 3 hours and breathing inside like a frog. like hibernating in the soil. So these are all side attractions in Kumbh Mela. But the real thing is to go for a dip, and that too on an exact time. You become very time conscious. It's at this time, you know, 7:12 in the morning, then the Amrita is going to be there. So take a dip at that time. So, and you find devotees going there also for the same thing. They attend Kumbh Mela. But what is their purpose? And you may find even them taking a bath at that time also. They are also very eager. Oh, time is passing. Let's go. Let's rush to the Sangam. So, Radhana Swami Maharaj explained to the devotees in the last Kumbh Mela that that particular moment of 7:12 is crucial, definitely. We don't deride that. Oh, no, any time is alright. No. No, because we are under time factor, so we respect time. We don't deride time. But he said that that particular moment is a wish-fulfilling moment. That is a wish-fulfilling moment. So, a personality who goes there with any wish gets fulfilled by the power of that auspicious time. The Sangam, the time, the atmosphere and everything else is conducive to making that thing as a wish-fulfilling moment. So, 99% of people are going with this motive, Karma Kanda, because they want to wash off lots of what they have done. All the nonsense they have done in this life and last life, they want to wash off all that and again become cleansed. So they are going for some cleansing process. But they have got no desire, no motive to give up those sense-getting ideas. No. They are not saying, my dear Lord, make me give up all my desires for sense enjoyment. They are not saying that. He said, Prabhu, bahut paap kiya hai, kuch to dho lata hun. They are going for washing. Or they are going for some other definitive specific material desire. Practically all of them are going there. Everyone. But it is only a rare soul who would go to that and say, my dear Lord, give me devotion. Give me devotion to you. This is reflected also in our 10 offenses very clearly, that one could be chanting Hare Krishna is not an act of bhakti. You could be chanting Hare Krishna with very, very materialistic motives. And that's exactly what Pacharya says you should not do. That's what is focused on the 8th offense. To chant the Hare Krishna mantra regarded as one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as sutra activities or karma kanda. That's a translation of the 8th offense. So chanting Hare Krishna is not necessarily an act of bhakti. You could be actually a very, very passionate materialist chanting Hare Krishna for some fruitive gain. There you are. And that's directly offensive to Krishna. He does not like that to... He does not like it. Therefore, sometimes people say, oh, this is Chaturmas and the devotees will rush to this kund or that kund for taking a bath and it is very nice. And there are a lot of stories like that. What makes this thing very attractive is, you see, Vyasdev had to do this. He had to obviously make the karma connection appear very attractive. But how would an uncontrolled wild materialist follow something unless it was not made very attractive? Said, if you do this, then you get this and this and this and this. You get heavenly planets. You get a rich life. You can be born an aristocratic family. You'll be very beautiful. You'll be highly intelligent. Can understand so many subject matters. So in this way, to pull people to follow some regulated sense gratification, the Karmakanda has to offer a lot of big list of benefits. That's the logic. If you take a bath at this time, then you get this, this, this. So at least you take a, go and take a bath rather than, you know, bathing in your house. And you take the austerity of going to Kumbh Mela. So it trains you in tapasya. You get all these benefits. It trains you in tapasya. You take a bath there. You see the Ganga. Hopefully you meet some holy people there. In the process of going to Kumbh Mela, if you're lucky, you meet some sadhus there. Or want to do some pravachan. Hopefully there'll be a ISKCON booth there where people are talking about Krishna consciousness. So then that karma kanda section at least hopefully allows people to come to that, to go to the Kumbh Mela, then they can be exposed to something higher than why they are going there, their motivation. So the karma kanda is usually a very attractive type of activity. In fact, somebody wrote a book on Ekadashi which was later banned by the Hare Krishna movement leadership, because it seemed to propagate the need for Ekadashi through Karmakanda principles. He said, if you follow this Ekadashi, Yogini, like this Sunday is Yogini Ekadashi. Yogini Ekadashi, Upper Ekadashi, and this, you know, Putrada Ekadashi. So, Putrada Ekadashi, wow, those who don't have Putra should do that. If you don't have Putra, I have got five daughters. Okay? So, now, if I do this Ekadashi, then I get Putra. So, I should do it very nicely. So that's the name. In fact, it appears directly that Putrada means, but even Brahmacharis do that Ekadashi. And they don't need Putras. They are already the most bona fide Putra of their father. But why do they follow Putrada Ekadashi also? That means that Thakur Bhaktivinoda had to say that Madhavatithi is only Bhakti Janani, not Karma Janani, Jnana Janani, Yoga Janani. If you follow this Ekadashi, whether it's Putrada or anything else, it's for Bhakti Janani. It is designed to give you actually devotion. So as I said, the Ekadashi following is in itself not an act of devotion. There are so many pious souls who follow Ekadashi also, but they're not doing it for purpose of gaining bhakti. But devotees, they have a different desire. So this is an infection. This fruitive desire is a deep-seated infection in the heart of the jivatma. It's easier said like this in a class, but if we examine our hearts, we will see that oftentimes whatever we are doing in the name of bhakti is very, very fruitive. Very fruitive. Because bhakti means anya abhilashita shunyam. Shunya. Bhakti has nothing to do with anything fruitive. Bhakti means a zero state level of no material desires. In fact, bhakti starts. Bhakti starts where the Vedas end. The three modes end. That's where bhakti starts. Sagunan samati tetam brahmbhuya kalpate. Sagunan samati. So beyond the three modes when you reach, then actually bhakti starts. Brahmbhuta prasannatma nasuchita nakamshati samasarvada bhuteshu mad bhaktim. So only when you state a state of brahmabhuta, where you are equipoised, you are not hankering for anything, then instead bhakti starts. Right? So when we examine ourselves, what do we look at? We say, I am a devotee of Krishna. Then when we understand in this life, we say, no, I am not a devotee of Krishna. I am heavily fruitive. Whatever I am doing, I am looking for name, fame, recognition, obviously. I am looking for all these benefits to come to me. Sometimes devotees complain, I am a devotee, but what is the use? I am not getting a job also. I have a cousin of mine who comes every Sunday here. Very, very poor person. He has been coming to the temple for the last 3 years. And he is unemployed. He is 50 years old. His family will just keep on torturing with the concept that why the damn hell are you going to this temple? What has this temple done for you? Well, for 3 years. And then you don't have enough job in the last so many years. If I go to some other Baba with a long daddy, then at least you have got a job minimum. That's the minimum they have done for you. So, you know, this temple seems to be quite useless and maybe you should stop going there. But this person is attached to the devotees here and he likes the deities and I'm sure he likes the prasad also. So he comes here. So we are so fruitive, we are so fruitive that this deep infection is there, and Krishna consciousness, Rupa Goswami is suggesting to us, anya abhilashita shunyam, especially jnana karmadi anavritam, anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Only when all the desires become, as Rupa says, zero, when we are hearing and dressing, zero, so, and all desires become zero, zero, then actually bhakti starts. So we reframe our sentence. Am I a devotee? No, as Bhavananda Prabhu was saying the other day, I am aspiring to be a devotee. That's more accurately said. I'm not a devotee, I'm aspiring to be a devotee because look at my desires. I'm impersonal with devotees, I'm impersonal in so many ways. So that's my impersonalistic tendencies towards God and therefore to all living beings. So I have got fruitive desires, so that's where I'm stuck. So I am not a devotee. I am not a Vaishnava. To quote Bhavananda Prabhu, he was stuck. When Prabhupada was at the last part of his life, his mortal Leela, he was talking about Varnashram. And he said the most important, that was one of his important projects which Prabhupada started, but he left to his disciples, to grand disciples, to actually execute, to actually divide society scientifically into these four classes, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, based on Krishna conscious principles, not caste principles. So Sasru Maharaj was next to him as his personal servant, said, but Prabhupada, we are Vaishnavas, so, it is dot, dot, dot. He didn't say anything further, but we can imagine, we can close the sentence for him and said, are we in a system? I think that's what he would have probably said. So we are like, Prabhupada even just cut him out. You're not a Vaishnav. You're not a Vaishnav. Finish. Something else he said. What was it? I forgot. Brahman, somebody can remind me. He said, you're not a Vaishnav. We're trying to become devotees. So we sort of comfortably sort of think that now we have found a place. We are now Vaishnavas. We have reached there. I'm a Vaishnav. It's not true. It's not true. To be called as a Vaishnav is such a lofty title, like knighthood or something, or sir, or His Excellency. These are big titles in the world. So the highest title you can ever give to any jivatma is Vaishnav. There is no title higher than that which you can label a jivatma with. If you are in the three modes, you can call person Shudra, is in the mode of ignorance. Then Kshatriya, somewhere in the mode of passion. And goodness, some Brahmana there. So when you call a Brahmana, then you have this Dhira, and then you have Vipra, and then these categories, and then you come to Vaishnav. So Vaishnav is the highest label. Of course, Sarvapadai Nirmuktam, a devotee is beyond labels, but nonetheless still, when you call somebody a Vaishnav, it is the highest thing you can address a person to be ever. There is nothing higher than a Vaishnav. In fact, because a Vaishnav is equated with God on the absolute level, there is no difference between Bhagwan, Bhakti and Bhakta. So you come to such a level where you become sort of one with God. You worship Prabhupada, not because He is God, He never said that, but as if He is God, because He is the representative of God. Sakshat dharitvena samas shastrai. That's what a Vaishnava becomes. He becomes as good as God. To the follower, he worships his spiritual master, a Vaishnava, with the same respect, reverence, as if he would have served God. So to be called a Vaishnava is such a lofty title, and to be thinking ourselves as Vaishnavas when we are filled with lust, anger and greed to such a horrible extent is a complete under understanding of our own selves, and we are putting ourselves falsely in a status which is not our right at all. So we need to revise this. This is in itself an act of humility, internal humility, where we understand that actually I am not a Vaishnav. Therefore, we offer obeisance to everybody when you come. One chakalpudra bhyasya, to everybody, because everyone is a Vaishnav. I am trying to become, by their mercy, a Vaishnav. By their association, hopefully, I become a Vaishnav. So, this fruitive concept, which in our Krishna consciousness is something which we have to really examine very deeply. Now, when does actually all this karma kanda, jnana kanda, yoga kanda change into bhakti? When does that transition take place from category A to category B? When you add one point. When you add the point of doing activities for pleasing Krishna. And that mood comes into the heart. I want to please Krishna. That's why actually bhakti has dawned in our consciousness. You may be still a karmakanda type of person, but it is now karma mishra bhakti. We may be impersonalistic tendencies strongly, but we want to please Krishna. When that consciousness dawns in our heart, then we are jnana mishra bhakta. And big yogis, when they perform, when they get this desire to please Krishna, they become yoga mishra bhakta. So what is a bhakta and what is not, what is a bhakta, is this one dividing line. Are all our activities designed with the motive to please Krishna? If that is a criteria, then you are a devotee. where all these hippies were. The hippies, as I explained earlier, were on the lowest level of consciousness, lower than even a Shudra, as low as you can go practically. They were lowest. But all their acts became an act of devotion, from lowest to act of devotion, bypassing karma, jnana, yoga completely. Why? Because all the activities were for pleasing Prabhupada. That was the whole motive of their activities. Whatever they did, the disciples, they may be so degraded in their consciousness, but now things changed. And what was the change? Everything they did, they said, was to please Prabhupada. Whether they were opening centers or distributing 100,000 books, they just saying, they all come here on the same dais and tell us, is it not? That we were, our only reward was to see that one smile on Prabhupada's face. The robot smiled. That was the reward. All the hardships, all the austerities, all the difficulties, all the insults, all they all went through was only for one person, to see a smile on Prabhupada's beautiful face. It becomes an act of bhakti. Because in our attempts to please God, we must remember that we cannot please God. We can only please God's representative. We can only please the Lord's devotees. So when the devotees are pleased, the spiritual master is pleased, then we can know that Krishna is smiling. That's why we know Krishna is smiling at us. So when the Prabhupada smile, and we all smile, but we don't attach so much importance to each other smiling. But when a pure devotee smiles, it conveys to the soul deep within that satisfaction of his very existence, because Krishna within is happy. When Krishna is happy, the soul also becomes happy. And the external criteria is that when a devotee smiles. So Prabhupada's disciples are so glorious because their one pointed aim in their life was to do everything they did to please Prabhupada. So we don't look at their backgrounds or what they came from, what culture they came from, how degraded they were. We don't look at that. We sort of keep it aside. But what is highlighted always is this: their sentiment, their mood, which is to always please His Divine Grace. And that actually is, whether it be karmakanda type of infected people or jnanakanda, whatever it is, as long as we have this one mood, sam siddhir hari toshanam. In all our activities, not just look for what is pleasing to us or good for us, but keep this one criteria in front of us always. In our chanting, in our ekadashi, or in our all activities, what is pleasing to Sri Krishna? What is pleasing to my spiritual master? What is pleasing to the devotees? When this mood percolates and encompasses our heart completely, then bhakti is growing rapidly. So whether I like it or not, I do it because it pleases devotees. Whether I get the name and fame or not, I still do it. So this is the essence of what Rupa Goswami says is Anyabhita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavartam. So this is what Narada Muni is also trying through his compassionate heart to bring Bharishman too from a lower level of consciousness to becoming a Vaishnav. Therefore, he is saying very clearly here, never out of ignorance take to the Vedic rituals or fruitive activity which are very pleasing to hear or appear to be the goal of self-interest. You should never make them the ultimate goal of your life. The ultimate goal of your life should be to please Krishna. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments? ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जाय श्री प्रभुपाद की जाय